Welcome to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law podcast for December 2009. I'm your host, Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. We hope you'll find this podcast informative, but it should not be taken as legal advice. The opinions expressed are solely those of the participants. In this podcast, we take a look at trademark dilution and, in particular, at the December 2009 decision of the Court of Appeals for the Second District, that's New York City, in Starbucks versus Wolf's Borough Coffee, carrying on business as Black Bear. My guest for this podcast is Jennifer Silverman, a partner at Elinoff, Grossman & Scholl LLP in New York City. Jennifer has written extensively on the law of trademark dilution. Trademark dilution laws were enacted in the United States, as the name clearly describes, to stop famous trademarks from being diluted. What is someone like Rolls-Royce supposed to do if someone brings out Rolls-Royce diapers? Traditional trademark law protects trademarks within their market space. To prevent others from using your trademark, you generally have to prove that consumers are likely to be confused. But is anyone really going to be confused into thinking that the people who make luxury Rolls-Royce automobiles are now making and selling, or licensing someone else to make, diapers? Probably not. But the use of Rolls-Royce on diapers would certainly do something to devalue the Rolls-Royce brand. It takes away from the uniqueness of the brand. In some jurisdictions, this is referred to as the distinctiveness of the mark. This kind of dilution is usually referred to as blurring. Another form of dilution, called tarnishment, refers to what happens when the junior user of the mark causes the mark to be weakened through unflattering associations, such as linking the famous mark to products of shoddy quality, or portraying the famous mark in an unwholesome or unsavory context. For example, Budweiser was successful in protecting its trademark, quote, "where there's life, there's Bud," end quote, to stop tarnishment by the trademark, quote, "where there's life, there's bugs," end quote, for an extermination company. In 1995, the U.S. Trademarks Act was amended to provide for a remedy for dilution of famous trademarks. The House Judiciary Committee said that the purpose of the bill was to protect famous trademarks from subsequent uses that blur the distinctiveness of the mark or tarnish or disparage it, even in the absence of a likelihood of confusion. But in 2003, the U.S. Supreme Court held that although that may have been what Congress intended, it was not what Congress put in the language of the statute. Under the FTDA, dilution was defined as the lessening of the capacity of a famous mark to identify and distinguish goods or services, regardless of the presence or absence of 1. Competition between the owner of the famous mark and other parties, or 2. Likelihood of confusion, mistake, or deception. Accordingly, the Federal Trademark Dilution Act required actual dilution of the distinctive quality of the famous mark, not merely a likelihood of dilution. The owners of the Victoria's Secret trademark, a trademark used, as the court described it, on moderately priced, high-quality, attractive women's lingerie, sued the owner of Victor's Little Secret, a store in Elizabethtown, Kentucky, and vendors of, again as the court described them, intimate lingerie, romantic lighting, and adult novelties and gifts. The question the court had to decide was whether there was a likelihood of confusion between the two marks. Although upon seeing Victor's Secrets, consumers made an association with Victoria's Secret, there was no evidence of any lessening of the capacity of the Victoria's Secret mark to identify and distinguish the goods sold in the Victoria's Secret stores, as was required by the language of the statute. In 2006, Congress repaired the Trademark Dilution Act with the Trademark Dilution Revision Act of 2006, making an injunction available to owners of famous and distinctive marks if use of the secondary mark is likely to cause dilution. We move forward to the case of interest this month, which I'll refer to as Starbucks versus Charbucks, which has been percolating through the courts for some time. Starbucks is well known for its brand of coffee. I like its distinctive, strong, almost burnt taste. Starbucks must want its trademarks to be as strong as its coffee, not watered down or diluted. So when Black Bear, a family-run business in New Hampshire, began selling Charbucks blend coffee in 1994, Starbucks was burned off. Starbucks sued the Charbucks people for, among other things, dilution of the famous Starbucks trademarks. The Charbucks people won their case in 2005 when Starbucks complained that the Charbucks name was an infringement of their trademark rights, in part because Starbucks did not prove that there was actual dilution. With the change to the law of trademark dilution in 2006, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit told the district court to take a second look at the case, applying the new law. Applying the new test in June 2008, the district court once again dismissed the Starbucks case. Jennifer Silverman explains the decision of the district court in 2008.
In June 2008, the district court judge again found for the defendant Black Bear. In the decision, the judge included additional analysis regarding the dilution claim under the new statute. The trial judge found that the marks were not very similar. And in general, the more similar the marks are, the more likely it is that there is a required association for dilution, and the converse is true. So the district court found that there was not a strong similarity between the marks. And in terms of whether or not the owner of the junior marks, the Charbucks marks, had intended to create an association with the Starbucks mark, the district court found that there had not been such an intent. And when the trier of fact is looking for such an intent, if they do find it, it can be evidence that the association takes place in the mind of the public, and then the judge can go ahead and assume that such intent was successful, and that sort of goes to what the statute tries to prevent. The law is trying to prevent a junior user or a defendant from sort of free riding on all of the goodwill that the senior user has been building up. So I think that's an important factor. But the district court found no such intent here. And the third factor, whether there is any actual association between the marks, this factor goes to whether or not an ordinary prospective purchaser, when it encounters the junior mark or the Charbucks mark, whether the purchaser is likely to think of the senior mark or the Starbucks mark. And in the district court decision, the judge talked about actually a likelihood of confusion rather than a likelihood of association. And in that decision, the judge found that there was none.
Starbucks appealed again. On December 3, 2009, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit in New York ruled that the district court didn't quite get it right and remanded the matter of dilution back to the district court for reconsideration. In describing the new test for dilution, the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Second Circuit said, "Dilution by blurring is an association arising from the similarity between a mark or trade name and a famous mark that impairs the distinctiveness of the famous mark, and may be found regardless of the presence or absence of actual or likely confusion, of competition, or of actual economic injury." The Court of Appeal noted that there are six non-exhaustive factors for the court to consider in determining whether there is dilution by blurring. 1. The degree of similarity between the mark or trade name and the famous mark. 2. The degree of inherent or acquired distinctiveness of the famous mark. 3. The extent to which the owner of the famous mark is engaging in substantially exclusive use of the mark. 4. The degree of recognition of the famous mark. 5. Whether the user of the mark or trade name intended to create an association with the famous mark. And 6. Any actual association between the mark or trade name and the famous mark. The second, third, and fourth factors, namely distinctiveness, uniqueness, and degree of recognition, favored Starbucks. The Court of Appeal agreed with the district court that there was minimal similarity between Charbucks and Starbucks. But the district court made two findings that bothered the Court of Appeal. Firstly, that the marks were not substantially similar, and that this dissimilarity alone was sufficient to defeat Starbucks' blurring claim. And secondly, that this factor, at a minimum, weighed strongly against Starbucks in the dilution analysis. The Court of Appeal noted that the district court may have placed undue influence on the similarity factor in determining the likelihood of dilution. Although substantial similarity was not required under some state dilution laws and under case law prior to the Trademark Dilution Act, it was not required under the new test. The new test does not use the words substantial or very. Consideration of the degree of similarity does not require a threshold that the degree be substantial, nor is the substantial threshold a prerequisite. The Court of Appeal also held that this error likely affected the district court's view of the importance of the other factors in analyzing the blurring claim, which must ultimately focus on whether an association arising from the similarity of the subject marks impairs the distinctiveness of the famous mark. The Court of Appeal said that dissimilarity should not be determinative.
The Court of Appeals found that the dissimilarity alone of the marks is not enough to find that there is no likelihood of dilution. There was some discussion in the opinion about how that is enough to find no likelihood of dilution, and the Court of Appeals said, nope, not enough. It's just one of the factors to be weighed. And if there's a dissimilarity of the marks, that could weigh in favor of the junior user.
The Court of Appeal also held that the district court had erred in dealing with two other factors. One, whether the Charbucks people intended to create an association with the Starbucks mark. And two, whether there is any evidence of actual association between the Charbucks mark and the Starbucks mark. With respect to the intention factor, the district court held that the Charbucks people had the requisite intent to associate Charbucks with Starbucks, but that the Charbucks people did not act in bad faith. So this factor did not weigh in favor of Starbucks.
Regarding whether or not there was an intent to create an association, in this case, the Court of Appeals found there did seem to be intent to create an association on the part of Black Bear. And that was dismissed by the district court judge because the judge found that there was no bad faith. And the Court of Appeals said, hey, there's nothing in the statute that requires bad faith. You're reading in something that's not there. And that was part of the basis for the remand.
With respect to the question as to whether there was an actual association between the two marks, the district court concluded that there was not, but did so on the basis that there was no actual confusion between the marks. The Court of Appeal pointed out that the absence of actual confusion or even a likelihood of confusion does not undermine evidence of trademark dilution.
The Court of Appeal said, hey, that's not the standard either. It's whether there's actual association, not confusion. And the Court of Appeal said Starbucks, the senior user, showed a survey that said, I think 30% of people who were surveyed had an association between Charbucks and Starbucks. And so the district court is supposed to consider that evidence on remand and to decide, whose favor it weighs in. And, presumably it's going to weigh in favor of Starbucks. So these factors could lead to a finding of blurring and dilution.
On the question of dilution by tarnishment, the Court of Appeal did not disturb the findings of the district court judge that there was no tarnishment in this case. Starbucks had argued that the Charbucks trademark damaged the positive reputation of Starbucks by evoking negative impressions in consumers, including the image of bitter, over-roasted coffee. The court didn't believe that that fact told them much about whether the consumer viewed the Charbucks mark as harming the reputation of Starbucks, or how that would affect the positive impressions about the coffee sold by Starbucks. Although Charbucks was once a pejorative name for Starbucks coffee, the Charbucks people were marketing their Charbucks coffee as a very high-quality product, which the court found inconsistent with the concept of tarnishment. Accordingly, the Court of Appeal agreed with the district court that there was no case of dilution by tarnishment. Jennifer Silverman believes that the remand of the Charbucks case will be closely watched by trademark practitioners.
Well, I think, first of all, my opinion being in the Second Circuit, that the Second Circuit, everyone looks to the Second Circuit for interpretation of case law. It's an important circuit. And I think that people are still very curious to see how the TDRA is being interpreted. This is an important case. Starbucks is an important litigant. And, you know, people who own famous trademarks spend a lot of money on advertising, spend a lot of money enforcing their trademarks, are watching very carefully how this case is being handled. So I agree, this is a very important case.
My guest for this podcast has been Jennifer Silverman, a partner at Elinoff, Grossman & Scholl LLP in New York City. For further information about Jennifer Silverman and the Charbucks decision, and for information on other jurisdiction podcasts, please visit iplawpodcast.com. You have been listening to Jurisdiction, the International Intellectual Property Law Podcast. I'm Don Cameron of Cameron McKendrick LLP in Toronto, Canada. Thank you for listening.